Srila Prabhupada, the living Bhagavatam. And what I've been doing is picking different topics. Anything that Prabhupada said about, say, chanting or prasadam, living in the Dham, cleanliness, health, like that. And anything that Prabhupada mentioned about that particular topic or any incidents that occurred between him and his disciples, etc., I tried to compile those into, usually comes out to about a 4 to 6 hour seminar on each topic. So this morning, because it's the disappearance of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I pulled out as many references that I could find from when I was traveling with Prabhupada, where he referred to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, or, you know, where there was some exchange between Srila Prabhupada and others, and where Prabhupada cited Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So I hope this will be okay. This is the first time I've done this particular one. As we know, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was the inaugurator of the idea of spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. At least he started to give it real form. In 1896, Prabhupada said on the year of his birth, then that was the year that Bhaktivinoda Thakur sent out a small book about the life and precepts of Lord Chaitanya to many universities all around the world. There was one that was found during Prabhupada's time at McGill University. In 1978, one of our devotees, Gaurkeshava Prabhu, he went to Sydney University, and in the Rare Books Library, he found the same book. It had been there since 1896. So it wasn't just McGill. Bhaktivinoda Thakur sent that book out to many universities all around the world. And we have a special connection with Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur by the grace of Srila Prabhupada and his spiritual master Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And Prabhupada often quoted Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his lectures and, you know, conversations. He would refer many times to different songs that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur had written, because he was a very prolific writer. And following in his footsteps, of course, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, they also were very prolific in producing transcendental literatures. So it's our, as Prabhupada said, our family business to produce transcendental literatures. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a prime example of doing that. So I'm going to go through a few of the incidences, examples. Some of them are direct references, some of them a little indirect, but I think it will give a broader perspective, in one sense, on Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and our connection with him through Srila Prabhupada. So I joined Prabhupada's party at the end of November 1975, and I was with him for 16 months. So all my references are taken from that particular period. It's by no means, of course, all the different, you know, incidences and references involving Prabhupada referring to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But we'll see how we go this morning. There's probably more here than we've got time for, actually. But how long do I go for? There's no breakfast this morning because it's a half-day fast.
I think it's 9:15.
Okay, 3/4 of an hour. All right, let's see how we go. Okay. All right, good. Okay, so this was December the 12th, 1975. Srila Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, and I'd been with him about 2 weeks at that point. So during his massage, Srila Prabhupada heard a letter from Jai Sachinandan Das in Los Angeles, which was written on behalf of a group of brahmacharis. In every ISKCON temple in the world, the assembled devotees offer their obeisances to the deities each morning as the Govinda prayers loudly play. George Harrison recorded it, and Yamuna Das, he sings the mantras. Disturbed by this custom, Jai Satchinandana quoted Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as well as Srila Prabhupada himself, that if a brahmachari hears and is attracted to a woman singing, it is a subtle fall down. In light of this, he wrote, many of the brahmacharis approached the temple president to see if it would be possible that when the deities are greeted in the morning, that instead of listening to Guru Das Maharaj's former wife singing the Brahma Samhita prayers, we could listen to your divine grace rather than hear a woman sing. He did not want to change the tape because it has been a standard thing in ISKCON since 1970. So requested by many devotees, I am inquiring from your divine grace if we could play a tape recording of you singing instead of a woman when the deities of Rukmini Dwarkadish are greeted in the morning. I'm sure that the devotees would be enlivened to hear you instead of electric guitars, the London Symphonic Orchestra, etc., etc. Srila Prabhupada was not pleased. He said that constantly changing is our Western disease. His reply was short and direct. No, you have made some discovery. All along you have been hearing the recording of Jamuna Dasi, and now you want to change. It is not ordinary singing, it is concert. Many people are singing, so it is not bad. Just like Sankirtan, many voices are there, men and women. So it is the same thing, Sankirtan. I approve of it. Here in the Krishna Balaram temple, we are hearing the same recording every morning. So if it is good here, why not there? So there. You can refer to the previous acharyas, but, you know, how you want to use their quotes, that's another thing. It's interesting that he was quoting Prabhupada himself, or Prabhupada had started that tradition of hearing the Govinda prayers every morning, and he liked it very much. So later on January the 7th, 1976, we had gone to Nellore in South India, and there was a conversation with Anandamaya Das. He's a French devotee who's stationed in Hyderabad. He's still there, even now. He wanted to clarify, this was on a morning walk, he wanted to clarify what seemed to be an apparent contradiction concerning the falling down of devotees and the eternal nature of devotional service. He asked, a devotee who has tasted the nectar of the lotus feet of the Lord can never forget it. Does that mean that his journey in the material world is about to finish? Prabhupada didn't answer himself. Instead, he said, answer somebody. So Mahamsa replied, He falls due to certain offenses, but afterwards, by the mercy of a pure devotee, he can come back. Because he has tasted the nectar of devotional service, he may try to enjoy the world for some time, but afterwards he will be fed up again and come back. Tamal Krishna Maharaj added, there is a statement in the Bhagavad Gita that if one is engaged in the service of the Lord, even if he falls down, he is to be considered saintly. And Prabhupada agreed, yes, if it is accidental. If it is purposefully, then he is not saintly, he is an offender. Another devotee wasn't certain what accidentally meant. Prabhupada elaborated, accident. It means he had former habit, and unknowingly he has done something wrong. That is accident, and that is explained by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Not purposely doing wrong. That is aparad. Namnad balad yasya hi papa buddhiyam. So if it's accidentally due to some bad habit, not quite gotten over, then it's excused. But if it's purposefully done, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, then it becomes an aparad. So later on, same month, January the 17th, Prabhupada had just arrived in Sri Mayapur Dam, and he spent 2 months there leading up to the Gopurnima festival in 1976. So of course the arrival in Mayapur invoked a lot of remembrances about Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's instructions. So entering the ground floor temple room, Prabhupada greeted the beautiful brass forms of Sri Sri Radha Madhava. Sri Shalagram Shila is also present, Mayapur being one of the few ISKCON temples where Prabhupada so far sanctioned his worship. After a lively Guru Puja, Prabhupada gave a short talk describing the benefits of life in the holy Dham. It was Bhaktivinoda Thakur's aspiration that the Europeans, Americans and Indians all together dance jubilantly and chant Gaura Hari. So this temple, Mayapur Chandradaya Temple, it is meant for transcendental United Nations. What the United Nations has failed, that will be achieved here by the process recommended by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Prativichaya Chaijata Nagaradi Gram Savacha Prachahoyibain Moranam. So you have come from all parts of the world and you were living together in this temple. So train these small boys. I am very glad to see the small children from all other countries and Indian Bengalis all together forgetting their bodily consciousness. That is the greatest achievement of this movement, that everybody forgets the bodily conception of life. Nobody thinks themselves here as European, American, Indian, Hindu, Muslim, Christian. They forget all these designations and simply they are ecstatic in chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. So kindly, what you have begun, do not break it. Continue it very jubilantly. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the master of Mayapur, he will be very much pleased upon you. And ultimately, you will go back home, back to Godhead. Thank you very much. To the loud cheers of the devotees, then Prabhupada went upstairs to his rooms on the second floor. So immediately Prabhupada arrived in Mayapur. He thought about Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's prediction that all the Americans and Europeans and Russians would come together and chant Jai Sachinandan. So later on, February the 3rd in Mayapur, continuing his walk on the grounds, Prabhupada went to the front of the land. He wanted to inspect the progress on the new building. That new building was what we call the Long Building. So that was started in Prabhupada's presence in 1976. So then Prabhupada questioned Jayapataka Swami about the Sri Chaitanya Gaudiya Math. They've erected a new building at the gateway to their property, meant to house a deity of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. This is at the Yog Pit. They were in charge of that. Meant to house a deity of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the father of Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master. Prabhupada wasn't at all happy about it. He felt that they were going over the head of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had lived there for many years, but he had never contemplated such a thing. Prabhupada told Jayapataka he should have challenged them, that he, Bhaktisiddhanta, could not understand where Bhaktivinoda Thakur should be placed. You have understood. You were so intelligent. Over-intelligent. That means rascals. Over-intelligent means rascal. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he remained for so many years, he could not understand, but you have understood to make Bhaktivinoda Thakur a gatekeeper. You tell him next time you go there, you are over-intelligent. So, we go there, of course, to the Yog Pit. There's that small temple just to the right at the gate. Prabhupada didn't like it at all. So you made Bhaktivinoda Thakur a gatekeeper. So, over-intelligent. So, about a week later, February the 10th, we were in Mayapur still. Prabhupada said that the Western hippies had picked up the habit of smoking ganja from people like Allen Ginsberg, who had learned it from the so-called sadhus in India. Prabhupada said that it was Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati who had taught him that any kind of intoxication was bad. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was very strict, he said, with a chuckle. He stopped for a moment, and with a reserved laugh, he revealed that as a lifelong celibate, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was so strict that sometimes he would criticize his father, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, for having married twice. If there was some fight between them, he would tell Bhaktivinoda, "Stree Sangi, you're attached to women." Of course, this was a transcendental relationship, and Prabhupada explained it in such a way that we could not misinterpret it. He told us that they had a special relationship, so we should not take it as an ordinary thing. nor should we advertise it. But he mentioned this to illustrate how strict a brahmachari Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was. So some family relationships, when you're in the family, you can say things that normally you can't say. And nobody minds. So, February the 20th, 1976, Mayapur, after an early massage, Srila Prabhupada went down to the temple room at 11 a.m. He offered his obeisances to the large painting of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur that had been placed on the Vyasasan. So this was the appearance day of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. He seemed very satisfied to see the beautiful decorations. There were long multicolored drapes hung along the back wall, as well as strands of marigolds draped around the Vyasasan, and banana trees and leaves were placed all around. Moving to the front of the Vyasasan area, he comfortably sat on an asana on the floor with his back to the jallywork fence. Achyutananda Swami sang songs glorifying Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, notably Oe Vaishnava Thakur. Afterwards, Srila Prabhupada gave a wonderful lecture requesting the devotees to do two things, to help develop Mayapur and to distribute many books. He said this was his Guru Maharaj's desire. His Guru Maharaj's father, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, had rediscovered the birth site of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and it was his attempt to develop it. Then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur continued that effort. And now he and his godbrothers were also doing whatever they could. He said, "We have got a great ambition to develop this place nicely and gloriously. Unfortunately, we are now connected with the foreign countries, especially the Americans." Bhaktivinoda Thakur's great desire was that the Americans would come here and develop this place, and they would chant and dance along with the Indians. So from this place, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started this movement, and he desired that as many towns and villages there are, this Krishna consciousness movement should be spread. So this Krishna consciousness movement is now in your hands. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he wanted me to do something in this connection. He wanted it from all of his disciples. Especially, he stressed many times, you do this. Whatever you have learned, you try to expand in the English language. Prabhupada told us how in 1935 he had gone to his Guru Maharaj in Radhakund. There's a house there in, just off nearby Radhakund. And that house actually was the house of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati would also go and stay there. And that place is still there. You can go and have darshan. So at that time, Prabhupada had received some frank and revealing advice from his spiritual master, which formed the basis for all of his future endeavor. When he was in Radhakund, Prabhupada said, "I was at that time in Bombay in connection with my business life. So I came to see him, and one friend wanted to give some land in Bombay for starting the Bombay Gaudiya Math. He was my friend. So that's a long story, but I wish to narrate this, the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami's mission." Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada immediately took up the land, and he continued that there is no need of establishing many temples, better we publish some books. He said like that. He said, "We are starting this Gaudiya Math in Altadanga. The rent was very small, and if we could gather two or 250 rupees, then it was very nice going on. But since this J.V. Dutt has given us this stone, marble stone, Thakur Bari," this is in Calcutta, "our competition between the disciples has increased. So I do not like this anymore. Rather, I would prefer to take out the marble stone and sell it and publish some books." So I took that point, and he has especially advised me, if you get some money, then you try to publish some books. So by his blessing, it has been very successful by your cooperation. Now our books are being sold all over the world, and it is very satisfactory sale. So on this particular day, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's advent, you try to remember his words, that he wanted many books to be published about our philosophy, and it should be given to the English known public especially. because the English language is now the world language. We are touring all over the world. Anywhere we speak English, it is understood, except in some places. So on this day, particularly on the advent of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, I especially request my disciples who are cooperating with me that you try to publish as many books as possible and distribute throughout the whole world. That will satisfy Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as well as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Thank you very much. So nice. Of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as I said, was very prolific in writing, and that was also, he passed that down to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and he's passed that to Prabhupada, and here's Prabhupada passing that down to us, and we have to pass that on to the next generation also. So that was an interesting comment that Prabhupada said. When they were, when Bhaktisiddhanta said that when they were living in Altadanga, that was a rented place, if they could collect 2 or 250 rupees, and selling some books, they were very happy preaching like that in this rented place. But later on, they were given this big temple in Bagh Bazar, marble and stone like that. And then he said immediately, there was argument, who's going to have which room like this amongst the disciples? He didn't like that. So Prabhupada took that instruction to heart. If you ever get money, print books. So another reference to Bhaktivinoda came up again. Later on in March 14th, 1976, there was some argument going on at that time, major argument, between the Grihasthas and the Sannyasis. And it was lining up to be a major conflict, and even Prabhupada at one point thought that the whole movement was going to be split in half with this conflict between the Sannyasis and the Grihasthas. So Prabhupada was bringing up on the morning walks, he was asking, so what is the arguments? You know, what is the, what did the different sides say? And then he was trying to resolve the problem. So after hearing both sides, Prabhupada spoke. This was on March 14th. He broke the deadlock. He finally settled the issue by wonderfully preaching to everyone that it does not matter what one is. One can do anything and go anywhere for Krishna. We are not to discriminate against anyone on the basis of their external dress. One has to be judged on the basis of one's advancement in Krishna consciousness. Quoting the verse, Yai Krishna Tattva Veti, Sai Guru Hoy, he told them, we cannot say simply that because one is a Grihastha that he must go away. Everyone is entitled to the same facility to preach, he said. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a Grihastha, and his son was a lifelong celibate and sannyasi, but both of them were gurus. There was no difference. He said that the tendency to form factions was not good, and he wanted it to stop immediately. He stressed there must be some cooperation between the temples and the traveling parties, and that no one fixed principle applied to everyone. So at that time there was a push to get the Grihasthas out from the temples, and not pay them anything, and have everything run by sannyasis and brahmacharis. And then, of course, most of the temple presidents, at least in America, were all Grihasthas. So there was a whole revolution going on, and there was a big fight. But Prabhupada resolved it very nicely. So, as he said, good example. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was, you know, preaching like anything, but he was a Grihastha. So how you can say the Grihasthas have to go out? Like that. So a few days later, March the 21st, 1976, today is Prabhupada's final day in Mayapur. Jayapataka Maharaj was instructed during the morning walk to arrange a meeting with Srila Lalit Prasad Thakur, the only remaining brother of Srila Prabhupada's Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Prabhupada wants to meet with him on his way to Calcutta tomorrow. Apparently Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had some difference of opinion with Lalit Prasad. Lalit Prasad is a Babaji, a member of a class of reclusive devotees who remain aloof from the general population to simply chant the Maha Mantra. His brother, on the other hand, was a sannyasi, an active preacher, who created a large movement and attracted much opposition in the process. Apparently, Lalit Prasad considers himself to be more confidentially situated in his relationship with the previous acharyas and Krishna. Despite this, Prabhupada has been negotiating to get either a lease or the ownership of the birth site of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the father of Bhaktisiddhanta and Lalit Prasad, and our spiritual great-great-grandfather. He wants to renovate the place and maintain a preaching center there. Prabhupada has met with Lalit Prasad previously, who said that he was willing to cooperate with us. He has not been able to develop the birth site of Bhaktivinoda, but still some of his men are hesitating. He has a committee to manage his affairs, and now it appears that they want another meeting. Without raking up the controversial points, Prabhupada made a few observations by which we could understand the actual symptoms of confidential service. So, what is the use of such men? Why is he keeping such men? They cannot do anything. He gets some pension and he spends the money, but they are not doing anything. So what is the meaning of his committee? Jayapataka Maharaj told Prabhupada that the Thakur has admitted that many times he has told some of his men to leave their family life and take up some preaching, but they don't do it. How they'll do it, Prabhupada rejoined. They do not know how to preach, neither they are trained up. That means it is his disqualification. He could not train them how to preach. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was training Haridas Thakur, Nityananda. Go there, preach there, do that. And my Guru Maharaj was also doing that. But he, Lalit Prasad, he has no power. He cannot do that. He simply talks that he is a very confidential devotee. That's all. But he cannot preach. Otherwise, Prabhupada, he developed this Mayapur. And he could not do anything. That means he has no such power. He should have developed that place, Jayapataka Maharaj ventured. Yes, Prabhupada said. He simply talks of big, big work. In the beginning, Prabhupada, he had no committee, nothing of the sort. It means Bhaktisiddhanta. He was just on his own. But that he'll not admit, that he has no power to do so. He simply thinks so, that he is the very, very confidential son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So some transcendental disagreements there, even before our time, even before the formation of the Gaudiya Mat, there was disagreements. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had these many sons actually, but these two were more prominent. One a Babaji, one a preacher. And Bhaktisiddhanta was criticized very heavily, even by his own brother, for going out and causing a disturbance, as he saw it, in his efforts to preach. There was a lot of opposition, especially in Navadweep, Mayapur area, to what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was doing. There was even a plot to kill him at one point. Some 20,000 rupees was paid to the local police chief so that he wouldn't say anything when they killed him. And because he knew that Bhaktisiddhanta was a very advanced devotee, saintly person, he didn't take it, and he warned him, there's this plot, so you be very careful. So anyway, but the Lalit Prasad Thakur, he was living Birnaga, and so the next day then, March the 22nd, at 5:30 a.m., we set off from Mayapur. Prabhupada descended the stairs amid loud kirtan and excited shouts from the devotees. He stepped into the back of the car, and we sped off for Calcutta, accompanied by an escort of 6 vans and one of Hamsaduta Swami's buses. Gagamuni Swami had just turned up from Germany with 6 Mercedes vans, big ones. And Hamsaduta had also driven 2 coaches, 50-seater coaches, from Germany. So we went off in a procession. Pushtakrishna Maharaj drove our car, and he had just arrived from Germany with a brand new Mercedes, which he had driven, he and Rida Prabhu. They had driven it overland through Turkey and I guess Iran and all those places, Afghanistan and Pakistan, and they brought that car for Prabhupada's use in India. So Pushtakrishna Maharaj drove our car. Tamal Krishna Maharaj sat in front, and I sat in the back next to Srila Prabhupada. It wasn't too long before I began to nod off to sleep. Despite Prabhupada's objecting several times and my own best effort, I just could not keep alert. Prabhupada became so annoyed that he had Pushtakrishna stop the car and he made me change places with Tamal Krishna Maharaj so that I was sitting in the front. After that embarrassment, I stayed awake for the rest of the journey. All along the route, as we passed through the small villages, young children came running out to see the convoy. They laughed, danced, and waved as we went past, attracted by the loud kirtan being broadcast from atop Gargamuni Swami's vans. So he had loudspeakers fitted, and he was, as he drove along, he was blaring out the Maha Mantra. So we stopped off at the ashram of Srila Lalit Prasad, the brother of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. As the last remaining son of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he is very old. His ashram consists of a small temple and a few red brick dwellings, none of which were well maintained. Prabhupada talked for some time with him and some of his management committee. They discussed the plans he has for the development of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's birth site. Nothing conclusive was arrived at with regard to their giving some land or even a lease on the property. And they didn't do it, actually. Didn't come through. They just couldn't bring themselves to do it. Even though Prabhupada could have gone right in there and done something very wonderful. But anyway. So we all took prasadam before leaving. Prabhupada with Lalit Prasad, and we disciples with the local devotees of the ashram up on the open roof. Jayapataka Maharaj, eager as ever to preach and advertise ISKCON's worldwide missionary efforts, told a group of our hosts about our preaching in the West. They were all eager to hear, and Maharaj tried to impress upon them the great need for Krishna consciousness in all the countries of the world. He told them of a law that had been recently passed in Sweden, which makes it no longer illegal for members of the same family to have sex with each other. He said that they are becoming increasingly degraded, and only Lord Chaitanya's movement can save them. The simple Bengali Vaishnavas were all shocked to hear such things. They were very appreciative of Prabhupada's preaching and his Western disciples. After an hour or so, we departed, with nothing being positively decided. And as I say, nothing happened after that later on. They didn't follow up on it. So a few days later, Prabhupada was in New Delhi. He was staying at the house of Lakshman Agarwal. He is the owner, or was the owner, of the Lakshman Sylvania Light Bulb Company. Very big company. And they had a house in Chanakapuri, exclusive area of New Delhi. Prabhupada was staying there for a few days, and he was doing a little pandal there outside the man's house. So for his morning exercise, Prabhupada took an easy walk up and down the grass reserve of the front street. He answered questions from his small band of listeners, Gurudas Swami, Atreya Rishi, Chayavana, Pushta Krishna, Gopal Krishna, Yadubara, and myself. Yadubara Prabhu queried why devotees get sick, if sickness is a punishment for those who violate God's laws. Prabhupada's answer was frank. Devotees, to become a devotee is not so cheap thing. You don't think that because you have got tilak that you have become a devotee. Why do you think like that? Bhaktivinoda Thakur is sung, Eta eka kale chela, nake tilak, galaya mala. Here is another follower of Kali. He has got tilak and mala. Sahaj bhajan kachen mamu, sanga laiya parewala, eta eka kale chela. He is worshipping bhajan, and he's taking another's wife. Here is a servant of Kali. Simply, he has changed his dress with tilak and mala. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he has said. So if you take tilak and mala, and then do all these nonsense things, then you are not a devotee. You are a Kali chela. To become a devotee is not so easy thing. Devotee means perfect, Atreya Rishi added. Oh yes, certainly, Prabhupada said. Devotee means that he is above these material laws. That is a devotee. Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. He is in the Brahman stage. That is the devotee. That means Sahaja. Oh, because I have got tilak and mala, I have become a devotee. This kind of cheating will not do. Kali Chela. Prabhupada mentioned that a few times from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So March the 26th, 3 days later, Prabhupada was still in Delhi, and he was giving a Bhagavatam class. So he stressed the need for preaching and distributing Lord Chaitanya's mercy to everyone. So only the Krishna conscious devotee, he can deliver them. He goes from town to town, village to village, house to house, to bring this message of Krishna and deliver him. Prahlad Maharaj is promising, he was speaking on verses from Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj is promising, I do not wish to go alone. Give me some strength so I can deliver some of them. It is not possible to deliver all of them. So this is a very important engagement for a Vaishnav. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he has written in his Chaitanya Shikshamrita that we can understand a Vaishnav very nicely when we see that he has converted so many conditioned souls to the Vaishnav life. This is the estimation of a Vaishnav. If I simply try for myself, I may be very advanced devotee, but that is not very much appreciated by Krishna. Prabhupada recalled that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati would become very pleased if one of his brahmacharis went to Namadweep and sold a few copies of his daily newspaper. Therefore, we become very much engladdened when we see some of our books and literatures are being sold. They will be read and be benefited. So this is the mission of the high-class Vaishnav, how to preach Krishna consciousness amongst the suffering humanity. And this is the purpose of this verse said by Prahlad Maharaj. And we are following in the footprints of Prahlad Maharaj. Never mind, even if it is imperfectly done, but we must execute the orders of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I may not be so very expert in delivering the message of Krishna, but my duty is to try to my best capacity how to distribute this knowledge to the suffering humanity. It is a fact that Srila Prabhupada is absorbed 24 hours a day simply in this mood of trying to liberate as many conditioned souls as possible. His mind never deviates from it. Because of his determination, we are here now, engaged in the practice of Krishna consciousness. And he constantly urges us to pursue this mood of being merciful to others as our means to perfection. There was once actually when I was with Prabhupada later that year in Vrindavan, and again Prabhupada was preaching about some point from about Prahlad Maharaj, and I just appreciated because Prabhupada very often referred to Prahlad Maharaj and this mood of his that I don't want to go back to Godhead, I want to take all these rascals with me. And at one point I smiled and I told Srila Prabhupada, I said, it seems to me that, you know, you're always in the mood of Prahlad Maharaj. And then Prabhupada smiled very brightly and he kind of agreed with that. He said, yes, he said, this is our, you know, example that we have to follow. So he was always very nicely in that mood. So next month, April the 13th, 1976, Prabhupada was in Bombay. And he was giving a class from 7th canto, 12th chapter, verse 2. And we continued on hearing about the description of the activities to be performed by the brahmachari students. Prabhupada stressed that development of character is the first stage of training, because without good character, everything else is useless. He told a story called Puna Mushika Bhava, again you become a mouse. A mouse was being chased by cats. So by the grace of a great sage, he was transformed to a cat. Then he had trouble with dogs. And again, the same sage transformed him, this time into a dog. In this way, eventually, he was changed into a powerful tiger. But then he looked hungrily at the same sage who had elevated him. Instantly, the sage turned him back into a mouse. So the idea is that by the grace of a higher power, one may be elevated to a higher position in life. But if one abuses that privilege, then again the opportunity may be withdrawn. Scorning material scientists, Prabhupada told us not to misuse our human form of life. So he said, our civilization is like that, that in the gradual process of evolution, we have come to the platform of human being. This human being is meant for understanding God, but they are forgetting God. Therefore, in the next stage, it is Puna Mushika Bhava, again become monkey. That is waiting us. The nature's law is like that, that from monkey we have become a human being. Prophets, clever scientists talk about evolution. Instead of again become a mouse, you again become a monkey. So that is waiting for us. The nature's law is like that, that from monkey we have become a human being. And in the human being we are dancing like monkey. So the nature will say, all right, again you become a monkey. He told us that a devotee has the potential to return to his origins. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that if one prepares himself correctly, one can go to the heavenly planets, to the abode of the demigods, or even beyond, to the spiritual realm. And he said, this Krishna consciousness movement is simply a very scientific movement that will help human society not to be degraded again, to be elevated. Krishna says, if you prepare yourself to come to me, back home, back to God, so you can do that. So what should be our aim of life? We shall go to the higher planetary system, or back home, back to Godhead? Back, we say, because we have come from God. Just like a man is put in the prison house, he has come from his free home. By his work, he is a criminal. Therefore, he is put into the prison house. Similarly, we're all part and parcel of God. Our real home is Vaikuntha, but we have come here. How we have come, that is a very mysterious thing. But we are part and parcel. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has sung, Anadi Karma Phale Pari Bhavanava Jale. Somehow or another, we have fallen. Therefore, the real aim of life, how to get out of this Bhavanava, this nations, that is the aim of life. So for those of you who are wondering about the origins of the soul, Prabhupada very clearly, and several times he said it very clearly, that we were originally there, we were free, we were in Vaikuntha, and now we've come here as prisoners, and then we can go back again, that's all. So this verse mentioned the importance of worshipping the Guru, and Prabhupada stressed this as the most important aspect of human life. And he also explained who is the real Guru. If you have got real Guru, and if you follow him, then your life is successful, there is no doubt. But if you have so-called bogus Guru, without any knowledge of Shastra, then your life will be spoiled. Especially this Mayavadi Guru, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was warned. Mayavadi Guru means one who thinks that everyone is God. That if you approach such Guru, then your life is spoiled. Mayavadi Bhasya Sunilehoi Sarvanasha. Everything is finished. Your spiritual life is finished. He concluded that training should be given at a young age and centered on character development. Afterwards, further academic studies can be introduced. He quoted a Bengali phrase, when bamboo is green, you can bend it. But when it is yellow, dried, then it will crack. So you have to get them young and train them. They're flexible. They can understand. But older, when people get older, it's very difficult. They crack. Very hard. So back to Vinod Thakur again there. April 22nd, 1976, Prabhupada had arrived in Melbourne on the first leg of what was to prove to be his last world tour. So the evening programs have been well attended by both devotees and outsiders. Tonight Prabhupada again spoke on the Bhagavad Gita 9.3, stressing the importance of faith in Krishna's words and the necessity of ending the process of transmigration of the soul. He told us that by properly understanding who Krishna is, we can attain our original spiritual body and end the cycle of repeated birth and death. Transmigration means that in every life we get many different fathers and mothers in different species. It is only now in the human life that we have the opportunity for proper guidance from Guru and Krishna. Therefore, he advised us to take advantage of the Krishna consciousness movement to make our lives perfect. The audience was attentive and they asked pertinent questions. Someone inquired how to surrender to Krishna. And Prabhupada quoted a song by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur describing how everything in his possession... This running has to stop. She either goes in or she stays in or she goes out, but she can't run up and down like this. It's very distracting. Prabhupada quoted a song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur describing how everything in his possession, his house, his wife, his children, were meant for the service of Krishna without any reservation. That, Prabhupada said, is surrender. An Indian man wanted to know if surrender is made by one's own effort, or does it just happen? Prabhupada told him that we are already surrendered. It's just a question of who we are surrendered to. A citizen is either surrendered to the government or to the police. He can live according to the law or he can live in jail. Similarly, we can choose either Krishna or his Maya, but our position is to be always surrendered. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is the epitome of that surrender. Yeah, everything that he has in his possession, that is all Krishna's, that's all. So the following month we were in Hawaii. Prabhupada had gone there for a whole month. He stayed in the Honolulu temple for the month of May. And he was writing like anything at that time, actually. I think he increased his writing about 6 or 7 times the amount that he was normally doing. So during a mid-morning discussion, Prabhupada was telling us that ideally temples should be reserved for brahmacharis and sannyasis, and the grihasthas should live outside. Then in the evening he explained more on that and said that the main principle is that everyone in the temples should be engaged in Krishna consciousness. This is the central issue. He said there must be a guarantee that there will be no diversion by children. If someone claims their devotional engagement is looking after their children, he said that is their personal interest. It will tend to cause disruption. He said that he is trying to engage everyone, fools, rascals, thieves, anyone, in Krishna consciousness, and that it is nearly impossible to find disciples who are able to follow strictly. So what can be done, he said. In speaking about one sannyasi's fall down, he said, if he cannot maintain, then let him change his ashram and continue on with his service, but don't be a hypocrite. I asked him about another sannyasi who had just fallen, pointing out that he had been a sannyasi for some time and seemed to have maintained his ashram well, preaching nicely, and had only recently fallen down. Prabhupada replied that he could either take up his sannyas again, or he could become a grihastha. I then thought about something that I'd read in Prabhupada's purports to the story of Chota Haridas in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Anchalila 2.166. The verse translation is, then all of the devotees headed by Swarup Damodar Goswami concluded that because Haridas had committed suicide at the confluence of the rivers Ganges and Jamuna, he must have ultimately attained the shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In his purport, Prabhupada says there, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur remarks that after one adopts the renounced order and accepts the dress of either a sannyasi or a babaji, if he entertains the idea of sense gratification, especially in relationship with a woman, the only atonement is to commit suicide in the confluence of the Ganges and the Jamuna. Only by such atonement can his sin be purified. If such a person is thus punished, it is possible for him to attain the shelter of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Without such punishment, however, the shelter of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very difficult to attain. When I voiced my doubt, Prabhupada replied, one who falls is called Vantasi, a person who eats, who vomits and then eats it. I asked, then how, by becoming a grihastha, can one obtain Lord Chaitanya's mercy? Again, this was in reference to being a sannyasi. Prabhupada replied that if the spiritual master gives that facility and makes that adjustment, then Krishna will accept that arrangement. Later on, he may again become a sannyasi. He cited 2 disciples for whom he had already made such arrangement, rather than send them away. Of course, he said, it's a shameful position, but what can be done? He said that his godbrothers and every sannyasi in India had criticized him for giving Brahman and sannyas initiation and for installing deities in the West, what to speak of allowing women to live in the temples. But for all that, he said, I am expanding, and for all their strictness, they are doing nothing. If he had been as discriminating as others, he told me, He would have been alone as before in Vrindavan and would again become a mouse. When I said that it seemed that it might take several generations before ISKCON devotees actually become pure, he replied, "No, if one is sincere, he can become purified within one generation." There was a common thing there that we'd heard, that Prabhupada had said that, you know, the third generation of ISKCON devotees, they would be pure. It kind of implied that it couldn't happen with the first and second. But then, I brought this up, I asked Prabhupada, and he said, no, it can be in one generation, why not? So all in all, he said, everything is going on simply by Krishna's mercy. And of course, it is also going on by his own great mercy as Krishna's pure representative. So June the 16th, Prabhupada had moved from Hawaii to the mainland. He had gone to Los Angeles for 10 days. And from there we went to Detroit. So 16th was his last day in Detroit. Then we were going to Toronto. So in his last class on the Bhagavatam 6150, Prabhupada gave a powerful lecture speaking strongly on the need to control the senses, especially the mind. Being the most formidable sense to control, if one gains mastery over the tongue, he can control all the other senses. He gave a practical example of how the tongue can cause large-scale havoc. Obviously thinking about his previous meeting with some priests. Two priests had come and they had discussed, and I think it came up again about meat eating, as it always did. Whenever Prabhupada met with Christian priests, the only thing that he would want to talk on was, why are you killing? Why do you eat meat? And if they couldn't accept that that was a bad activity, he would not discuss anything further with them. It was always on that one point. Same thing, these two men came, Monsignor, somebody or other, and somebody else. So Prabhupada was thinking about that now in his class. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has said, Tarmajya jiva ati, lobha maya sudamati, taki jeta katina samsari. Of all the senses, the tongue is the strongest enemy, always proposing, eat this, eat this, eat this, eat this, eat this. Just see, for the tongue, one person eats a little bit of beef only, not much, a piece of beef. But for the satisfaction of the senses, thousands of innocent animals are being killed. Just see. They cannot control this. A little bit of beef, they cannot control. So we are prohibiting no meat eating. So this is controlling the sense. Because unless you bring the sense under control, there's no question of spiritual advancement. If at least theoretically we understand our true position, he told us, then our duty changes. And when we come to the stage of practice, then we become purified. At that point, we reach the stage of bhakti. Bhakti actually begins after liberation, Prabhupada told us. Nivritta tarsha upagiyamanat. Nivritta means one who has ceased this trishna. Trishna means aspiration. So we have got so many aspirations. So this transcendental life, chanting of Hare Krishna, is the means for the liberated person. This chanting is the medicine for our conditioned stage. Then there was a couple of nice references that Prabhupada made about Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Later on, when we had left America, we came here to Europe. Prabhupada arrived here, I think, on the 21st of July in London. And he was here at the manor for about a week. Then he went to France, and he stayed for about eight or ten days. New Mayapur. He installed Krishna and Balaram on the last day there on August the 6th. And actually, this year they're celebrating the 30th anniversary of the installation of Krishna and Balaram. Everybody's invited. It's going to be a nice festival. I think that's the 8th, 9th, and 10th Balaram's appearance day in August. We're also going there. My wife Sitala, she was the pujari at that time, and I was there as Prabhupada's servant. So anyway, Prabhupada from France, then he flew to Tehran in Iran. Now it was an interesting situation in Iran at that time. The Shah was still in power, and all the preaching was being done by Grihasthas, except for one sannyasi. Trayarishi Prabhu and his wife were there. He had his longtime friend, Navayavana Prabhu, and his wife. They were friends actually living together in a flat before they became devotees. And Dayananda Prabhu and Nandarani, they were there. And then Paribrajakacharya Swami, he was there. And I think Mahamaya's husband, what's his name again? I forget his name. Ganagamya Prabhu, he was there. He was a brahmachari at that time. So that was the whole Iran Yatra at that time. So they were all working, actually, daytime jobs. Trayarishi was the representative for Arthur Young and Company, very big accountancy firm. And he had persuaded them, because he was Iranian, he had persuaded them to let him start a branch of Arthur Young's in Iran. So he was running the whole operation. And Dayananda was working for IBM. He was a programmer, computer programmer. And I'm not sure what Navayavana was doing, helping out here and there. And Paribrajakacharya was visiting the Shah of Iran's palace every few days and teaching yoga to the Shah's niece. And they said that he was the first Westerner to be allowed into the inner chambers of the Shah's palace in 2,000 years. So it was kind of amazing stuff was going on there at that time. Pity about the revolution, but anyway, these things happen. So this was on August the 8th. Srila Prabhupada mounted his Vyasasan, a converted armchair covered with an orange brocade sari, to receive Guru Puja from the enthusiastic devotees. Then at the end of the kirtan, we all sat on opulent rugs, eager to hear his lecture. The place was covered in Persian carpets, right? I think one carpet was worth about $10,000 or something. So it turned out to be a very short class, hardly 1 minute, on Srimad Bhagavatam 3:22:19. Prabhupada had Prajimna Prabhu read out the Sanskrit verse, word for word, transliterations, and the translation. It described Cardamom Muni's desire to marry, have a child, and then retire from family life. Prajimna read the purport, which was exceptionally interesting. Quote, according to Vedic principles, the first part of life should be utilized in brahmacharya for the development of character and spiritual qualities. In the next part of life, one may accept a wife and beget children, but one should not beget children like cats and dogs. Cardamom Muni desired to beget a child who would be a ray of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should beget a child who can perform the duties of Vishnu. Otherwise, there is no need to produce children. There are two kinds of children born of good fathers. One is educated in Krishna consciousness so that he can be delivered from the clutches of Maya in that very life. And the other is a ray of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and teaches the world the ultimate goal of life. As will be described in later chapters, Cardamom Muni begot such a child, Kapil, the incarnation of the Personality of Godhead, who enunciated the philosophy of Sankhya. Great householders pray to God to send his representative so that there may be an auspicious movement in human society. This is one reason to beget a child. Another reason is that highly enlightened parents can train a child in Krishna consciousness so that the child will not have to come back again to this miserable world. In the same order as Cardamom Muni, about 100 years ago, Thakur Bhaktivinod also wanted to beget a child who could preach the philosophy and teachings of Lord Chaitanya to the fullest extent. By his prayers to the Lord, he had as his son, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, who at the present moment, is preaching the philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu throughout the world, entire world, through his bona fide disciples. Srila Prabhupada added a few comments to his purport which were highly relevant to this small community of householders. So he said, householder life is not condemned. It is required. If there is no householders, then where from the saintly persons will come? They will not drop from the sky. So everything is required. In our society, we have got householders, we have got brahmacharis, we have got sannyasis. So the Krishna consciousness movement is a very scientific movement for the total benefit of human society. If it is properly carried out, then everyone will be satisfied and very happy and go back home, back to Godhead. Thank you. So there you go. Saintly persons do not drop from the sky unless they're Narada Muni. He does, but... And then again, another reference, still in Tehran, a few days later on August the 11th. After about an hour, we returned to the temple for Guru Puja. Prabhupada was walking in Nivaran Park, which was a place, landscape park on a hillside, just next to one of the main palaces there in Tehran. So we would drive up the hill, start at the top, and then walk down the pathways down to the bottom. It's kind of nice. You could see the whole of Tehran from that park. So then we returned for Guru Puja and Bhagavatam class. The verse described how Kardama Muni kept his mind fixed on Lord Vishnu. And in his short talk, Prabhupada gave a few good examples of how one can do one's work and still remain thinking of Krishna. In South India, he said, there is a class of professional dancer. They take a big jug on the head without any ring. It is kept as it is. Because when you see normally in India, they carry the pots on their heads. Or if you see the laborers on the building sites, they carry stacks of bricks, sometimes 8 or 10 bricks. They put them up, but they have a cloth ring, thick, that they put on the head so that the pot or the brick is not sitting directly on the skull. And the cloth ring actually gives a base for the pot to stay on. But Prabhupada's saying here in South India, there's a class of dancer. They don't even keep that ring, and they practice how to keep the pot on their head and dance at the same time without spilling anything. The head is shaved, but they are so practiced to keep the balance that the pot does not fall down. They're keeping the balance. So by practice, this is possible. There are many professional vendors. They keep their basket on the head, and they take their child and going and canvassing, oh, we have got this fruit. So it never falls down. They are keeping balance. So for those of you new ages, this is how to keep balance. So this is a crude example that everything can be done by practice. There is another example that Rupa Goswami gives, that a woman who has got an extra lover besides the husband. So she's always thinking of that lover, although she is very busy with her household affairs. That means if you want somebody very seriously, you can think of him always, 24 hours, in spite of you being engaged in so many duties. It is possible. So we have to practice this Krishna consciousness. He told us that although in the spiritual world we do not have to work to maintain our existence, here in the material world we do. And yet still we have to become Krishna conscious. His words were pertinent because as soon as he finished his lecture, Atreya Rishi, Dayananda and the others will be going out to engage in seemingly mundane jobs. So he cited another example to encourage them that what they are doing is actually spiritual. Because a devotee, Prabhupada said, has nothing to do with material things. Even if he works for the maintenance of the body, that is not material. Just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was a magistrate. But it is not for a magistrate to write so many books, Siddhanta Purnam. So he was in a different, transcendental platform. So that is possible. The mind may be absorbed in Krishna's thought. Satatam kirti yanto mam, tushyanta yanti cha, ramanti cha. That is possible by practice. So I was given until 9:15. It's now 9:26. There are a few other things. Do you want me to finish this or not? Let me just see how much more there is. Page 17 and page 20. There's about 4 more pages. Do you want me to finish or?
I could. I'd like to ask you a question.
Okay. I can finish off the rest of the. There's not many, much more actually. Just a very little bit. If you want, I can finish. Okay. So, after leaving Tehran, Prabhupada flew back to Bombay on August the 13th. And August the 16th, then, Prabhupada was taking his walk on the roof. So when Dr. Patel arrived, they sat for a while in the open air and they discussed vairagya, or detachment. Prabhupada told him that if one has bhakti, vairagya automatically comes. Now, I have got some bhakti, a material desire also. Then that is not bhakti. That is markata vairagya, monkey renunciation. That does not mean that I shall stop bhakti. No, you take bhakti to the regulative principle, then automatically the vairagya will come. The vairagya is not coming, then that means that you have not been become a pure bhakta. Or you have not been a pure bhakta. That is adulteration. Anyabilasita shunyam. That is bhakti. And because there is not anyabilasita shunyam, it is adulterated. Dr. Patel knows a fair amount of Sanskrit, and he quoted from the Gita. Bhakti avya bicharini. Prabhupada said yes, quoting the full verse. He is above the three gunas. So if I'm still under the modes of material nature, that means that I am not avya bicharini bhakti. So this is the warning, and therefore Lord Buddha rejected the Vedas. Dr. Patel said, yes sir, because in the name of the Vedas, people were misbehaving. Prabhupada agreed, adding that just as people then were justifying their desire to eat meat by citing Vedic references to animal sacrifices, similarly, he said, there is a class of men now who misuse the works of the six Goswamis to justify living in Radhakund. But whether you have followed the other things, Prabhupada said, Vachyavegam, Manasakrodavegam, Prithivim Sasishyat. So you are manipulated by the Udara Vegam, Upasti Vegam. So first there is this test, Etam Vegam Yo Vishaheta Dira. Then for him, Radhakund, Dearest Tatra Namuyati. But he's got 36 Saivadasis and he is living in Radhakund. My Guru Maharaj, he wanted to publish this book, Govinda Lilamrita. So he asked permission from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So first of all, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he said, I will tell you someday. And then when he reminded him, he said, all right, yes, you can print one copy. If you were so much anxious to print it, you print one copy, and you will read, and you will see, oh yes, you have printed, but it is not for distribution. So, we are printing all these books for understanding properly. Not that, oh, here is Radhakund, let us go, jumping over like a monkey. There is Rasalila, oh, he immediately, like that. So Prabhupada was very much against. Said, yes, in the end of the Nectar of Instruction, it advises Radhakund is the best place to live. But whether you've understood the first verse, if you've controlled all the urges and pushes, then you can think about the rest. So September the 6th, 1976, was Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's appearance day. Prabhupada told us to observe a half-day fast. Now, in his class, he didn't mention Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He just was speaking on the Bhagavatam. But then in the evening, Prabhupada was sitting in his garden. In Vrindavan, he had a nice back garden. And of course, they've spoiled it now. They've put all this kota stone down. But previously, there was a nice lawn. And then Charanaravindam, who was from England, he dug it all up. And he put this big pond in the middle, a lotus pond, and with a nice fountain with a four-headed Brahma in the middle, and the water spouted out from the top of his head. And when Prabhupada returned back, the devotees were a little concerned whether he would like the new changes to his garden. But when Prabhupada came in, he loved it. He sat down, and Charanaravinda had made this bench against the back wall, and he put like a thatched roof over the top of it. And they put a nice seat down. Prabhupada, he looked around and he went and sat down with his japa beads. And then he told him, so put the fountain on. So, the water shot up in the air like that. Prabhupada smiled and said, oh, this is very nice. So Charanaravindam, he was in. And every time Prabhupada went in the garden, he got in there because he was Prabhupada's gardener. So it was very nice. Anyway, this particular evening, some devotees were going out to preach to foreign countries. I always tell everybody else to switch off their phones. There we go. So at this point, Vipramukhi Prabhu spoke up to inform Prabhupada of his own imminent departure. I go to Delhi tomorrow and I'll leave to go to Istanbul. He had decided to go to Istanbul because he had heard that Prabhupada said that he would take the dust of the feet of anyone who preaches in the Muslim countries. Prabhupada gave Vipramukhya a broad smile and spoke with strength and determination. Very good. You go with the blessings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Prativachaya Chajato Nagarati Gram. Very good. Krishna will save you. Chant Hare Krishna and depend on Krishna and then everything will be alright. Don't be afraid that you are going to a foreign country. There is no foreign country. Ishavashem Idam. Everything is Krishna's. Marobi Rekobi Yo Icha Tohara. Surrender means that Krishna, I have surrendered to you. Now if you like, you can protect me. And if you like, you can kill me. Whatever you like, you do. So that is all. Marobi Rakobi Yo Icha Tohara Nichadasi Pratitua Adikara. I am your eternal servant. You have got the full right. Either you can kill me or protect me. That is your business. But I surrender. Bas. This is surrender. If you put me into inconvenience, then I'm not going to surrender? No, that is conditional. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, whatever you like, you can do. That is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching. Whatever you like, you can do. It is up to you. I don't object. Yata tata va vidadatu lampato. And then one more. Last one, I think. September the 7th, 1976, next day in Vrindavan, Prabhupada was giving his class on Bhagavatam 178. Prabhupada opened up his half-hour lecture with a warning about the dangers of hearing from Mayavadis. He condemned their idea that the Bhagavatam was written by Bhopadev and said that even Shankaracharya could not comment on that holy text. He wrote comments on the Bhagavad Gita, but he could not touch the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because in the Bhagavatam, the things are so nicely set up, Kritvanu Kramya, that it is not possible for the Mayavadis to prove that God is impersonal. They cannot do it. Nowadays they are doing, reading the Bhagavatam in their own way, but that does not appeal to any sane man. Sometimes I've seen the big Mayavadi is explaining one verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam that because you are God, therefore if you are pleased, then then God is pleased. So this is their philosophy. You do not require to please God separately, so if you are pleased by drinking wine, then God is pleased. This is their explanation. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has condemned this Mayavadi commentary. He went on to say, they are very, very envious to Krishna. Krishna is Dvibhuja Mulida, Shyamasunda. And the Mayavadi explains that, oh, Krishna has no hand, no leg. This is all imagination. How much offensive it is, they do not know. But to warn people like us, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is plainly warned, do not go to the Mayavadis. He said, Mayavadis are to be found even here in Vrindavan, but they may not appear obvious to the untrained eye. So you should be very, very careful. Don't go to hear any Mayavadi. There are many Mayavadis in the dress of Vaishnavs. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has explained about them. Eta eka kali chela naki tilak gale mala. That here is a follower of Kali. He has got tilak on the nose and neck beads, but he is a kali chela. So you will come to Vrindavan. Be careful. Very careful. Mayavadi Bhashya Sunile. There are many Mayavadis here, so-called Tilak Mala, but you do not know what is their inside. But the great Acharyas, they can find out. So they can create a disturbance only. And therefore we have to follow the Goswamis, Goswami literature, especially the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which we have translated into the Nectar of Devotion. Every one of you should very carefully read and make progress. Don't be victimized by the Mayavadi, so-called Vaishnav. It is very dangerous. So I think we'd better stop there. There is a couple of last things, but we'll finish there. Again, Prabhupada quoting about the Markata Vairagis, the monkey sannyasis, yeah, making a show, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur, again he quotes the same verse. Here is a follower of Kali. He's got Tilak, Kuntimala, Japamala, but he's actually a Kalichala, that's all. So, Gauri Prabhu, you had a question. Sorry to go on.
No, I was just thinking that, what is my
question? Oh, okay. There's only one more thing there that's finished, so that's fine. Any questions? I think it's interesting to see all the different ways that Prabhupada used quotes from Bhaktivinoda Thakur and how, you know, his rationale for his preaching, how he set up the preaching in ISKCON around the world was so much founded in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's teachings. Yeah. Prabhupada was very much familiar with all of his bhajans and books, etc. And you can see, you know, how it's all interwoven there. He had a very, very solid understanding of what it means to be a Vaishnav and what it means to preach and what it means to be a surrendered devotee. And all of that, of course, is coming largely, not exclusively, but largely from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Yes. I'm sorry,
what year was that?
Tehran.
Yeah.
That year was August 1976 when Prabhupada was there. Then I think 2 years later, maybe, was it? 78 or 79?
79.
79 when the revolution occurred, and then all the devotees got kicked out. But we have devotees there. Still we have many devotees. But it's very quiet. Any other questions? Alright, anyway, so I hope you enjoyed that. Give a little slightly different perspective. Usually we hear, you know, the usual things about the birth and the activities and etc. But I think it's very nice just to see how, you know, in the modern context, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was, you know, giving support for Prabhupada's preaching. Yeah. Okay, so I guess then we'll finish at this point. Tonight we're speaking again. At what time is it? Does anybody know what the... Okay, 7:30, so we'll be continuing on with Prabhupada's Transcendental Pastimes, Prabhupada the Living Bhagavatam. I haven't completely decided what the topic will be yet, but I think it may be something to do with prasadam. So we'll finish at this point. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki jai. Go Premanandi.
Yeah.